Welcome back to Dating Games, the modern relationships podcast. I'm your host, Bobby Temps. And the first thing I should mention is, with the show being relatively new, we've also got a Patreon. So if you are enjoying it so far and you want more bonus content, you can get extended episodes, including the chat after the chat I have with the guests, and also ad-free episodes. And we're doing a bonus series just for our Patreons as well. So you can find that if you go to my website, bobbytemps.com. Hopefully you'll join us. It's just a few units of your currency. We have it in multiple currencies. I don't know how to say that yet. Today, I'm joined by a really exciting guest, someone I very much look up to. She's a brilliant writer and actor who you may know best from Mrs. Brown's Boys, where she plays neighbour Winnie McGugan. She also competed last year on Dancing with the Stars in Ireland. And so please welcome to the show the brilliant Eilish O'Carroll.
Hello. How are you, Bobby?
I'm very good.
Yep, it's lovely to be on here. Thank you very much indeed for the invite.
Of course. And I think you had a story to start us off with.
I do, yes. I remember my first dating experiences, and one in particular. I was about 17, and at that time, I actually felt a bit like a wallflower, because I was. I would go off to discos and, you know, in those days, the girls would all stand on one side of the room and the boys would all stand on the other side of the room. And those who had the courage would come over and ask the girls to dance. And I was never asked up to dance. Right? But I remember one particular night, just before you're getting the last bus home, right, the last dance, this guy came over to me and asked me up to dance. Now, he didn't have many social skills at all, right? But I was so grateful, and he kind of mumbled, right, I'd like to take you, right? So I immediately went, yes, please, right? Now, I didn't like him. We had nothing in common, but here's this young 17-year-old with absolutely no self-belief and no confidence, and actually thought, right, I decided we would go out. And he was taking me to some party on the Friday night. So I thought, fine. So I went off to the party. He never spoke to me the whole night. He wasn't able to have a conversation, right? He introduced me to one friend and never introduced me to anybody else. So I'm standing there like a lemon, and takes me back to the bus to get me home. And he goes, bye. That was it. That was my first dating experience. And I just thought, why did I go out with that man? I didn't like him. Right, I just felt so grateful. And I think it put me off dating for quite some time. But I did grow up. I did feel a little bit more confident as years went on. But that was definitely a desperate experience for me. And I didn't know how to say no. Right, when he asked me out, I thought, I really don't know this man. I really don't like you. I'm just grateful. So you say yes. And I suppose I came from that kind of era, unfortunately, where we were not brought up to be rude, and saying no sometimes was very rude. You'd use 1,000 words to say no. You wouldn't just say no. You'd make up some excuse. But yeah, that was one of my first dating experiences.
Yeah, and that's something that even I still try and actively practice, is saying no and that being enough, right? Because the temptation is to say no and then you have to give a reason and explain
Absolutely.
Yourself.
And give a reason. No is enough. No in itself, and it's such a powerful word, and it's such an empowering word, and no is enough. And I think I learned how to say no when I lived in the UK better than I learned in Ireland, right? Because we come from a culture that when you walk into somebody's house and they offer you a cup of tea, you never say no, because they'd be offended. And if you sit down and they go, I'll give you something to eat, and you say, no, no, I'm fine, absolutely, no. You'll have a sandwich and you'll eat that sandwich. So when I went to England, right, I found that I was invited around to somebody's house for coffee, and that's just what I got, coffee. Now, sometimes I wouldn't eat anything before I went because I thought, they're bound to feed me, right? Different culture. No, they don't feed you. They mean coffee means coffee, end of story. You don't drop into somebody's house. You make an appointment. You know, you don't, you know, when you're passing by, say, well, I must call in and see Annie. No. They will tell you it's inconvenient. And I found that really strange, but yet very powerful, because I thought, instead of taking it as a rejection, I thought they're just being very honest about what their needs are. And no, I don't want to do that. So, yeah.
Yeah, very well, powerful word. It's funny you reminded me of an experience I had of that kind of culture clash. where bringing someone home to my mother one time when I was much younger, and she was doing all of that. She was, you know, I mean, it is a bit of a stereotype, but there's truth to it. The sort of, go on, you will. You'll have something, won't you? And and it doesn't matter if you've already eaten or if you don't like what you're being given. You have to have something. My friend said at the time, she's like Mrs. Doyle from Father Ted. And then he mumbled it to me and I said, she'll love that. Tell her that. But, you know, she's not exactly a glamorous person in the series.
Yes.
But my mum did love it because she was like, oh, he's recognising my culture. As opposed to just thinking I'm pushy.
Yeah, and that's it. It is part of our culture. And it's hard, you know, and all that was happening for me was the culture clash. But I was taking it very personally. I was taking it as a personal rejection. And I'm going, no, it's not rejection. They're not trying to offend me. They're just being very honest. And the lovely thing I loved about the English as well was that they would tell you what they needed. You know, they'd sit in your house and they'd say, any chance of a sandwich?
Mm.
You know what I mean? And I would never do that to somebody's house, right? It'd be like, oh, I'd be horrified, you know? So that's what I mean. They're just able to say what they need. And I don't think that's a bad thing. I think the Irish, we could learn a lot from that.
I think that's interesting. And yeah, I find there's a directness in other ways. So I think we can have a stereotype sometimes as a sort of nosy people that talking to a stranger is very normal to us in a way that it's not in England.
Yeah, whereas it took me a while to adapt when I came back to Ireland. When you'd go into a local shop, now I lived in West Cork for quite a few years when I got back. You go into the supermarket and the lady in front of you is talking and talking and talking and you've got your basket full of food and you're going, when is this conversation going to end, right? Because I was so used to going into a shop, getting what I wanted and coming out. That's not what happens in Ireland. They will actually stop, even in 2020, they'll actually say, well, how are you doing? And you will engage in a conversation. And that's very heartwarming because once I got back into the flow of it, I realised that when it's my turn, she'll spend as much time with me as she spent with that lady if I wanted it, right? So I learned to slow down a bit.
I think that's a good point. And it kind of links back to dating a bit for me, because one of the things I experience when going on dates is I fall into that trying to figure people out. And unless I'm careful, I'm asking about people's family and how many siblings they have and who they vote for. It can be very contentious, you know, and I'm asking all this because there's this mentality of trying to figure out who somebody is and where they fit in society.
Yes.
And are they compatible? Mm-hmm. And actually, you know, that's something to a degree I'm trying to move away from, maybe certain family expectations.
But sometimes it's not even necessarily about trying to find out about their family. You're actually trying to find common ground.
Mm.
You know, when you're dating with somebody for the first time, it is about kind of, yeah, I want to figure you out, but I want to know that we have something in common. You can have huge problems if culturally you're very, very different. And I'm not saying it wouldn't stop you from falling madly in love, because that does happen. I mean, my husband was culturally very different to myself, but it does cause problems depending on what society you're actually living in and the cultural difference. It's the society can make them a problem for you rather than you make them a problem. Love alone is fantastic, but sometimes the cultural differences can be so different that it actually can cause a problem.
I love that. The external factors we have to be very careful of, because you're right when I say that, you know, that it can sometimes be a bit much for people and I try and pare back and ask less questions.
Yeah.
It's mainly the English that find that a bit much, a bit too interrogative.
It is, yeah. Where the Irish will volunteer the information anyway, right? We're inquisitive by nature and being nosy, I don't think it's about being nosy. I think they really are interested. Right. And people love talking about themselves, as you can see. People love talking about themselves. And the best way to put somebody at ease is to ask them questions about themselves.
Oh, yeah. Half the reason why I'm good at interviewing is because I can ask questions that relate to what you said. And then I show I'm listening.
Absolutely. Absolutely. There you go.
Right. Well, I'm glad it's working. Or maybe you're just happy to talk.
No, it's working. It's working.
And then in particular, I'm interested in what changed for you then in your 40s. You had a big realization. Wow.
I did. I got to 40 and life begins at 40, so they say, right? And my children were coming up, well, one was already at university. My other son was coming up to 18, so they were almost independent. So I had time in my life, and I do remember the timing. I remember thinking, God, I'm 40 and I have time for me. And I decided that it was time I was going to take out of work and do some courses and learn something, you know, learn something new just for me. I didn't have to worry about the kids anymore. So I joined this group. It wasn't a group. It was a seminar that I saw advertised. And I was very interested in finding myself. And I think most people of that age do go through that process of what is life all about? Because suddenly you realise you're 40 and it's such a huge number. And you're looking back and you go, well, what have I actually done with my life? Where's the measuring stick? What do I use to measure my success by? And what's the meaning of life anyway? So that's where I was. I was disappearing internally with all these questions. So I went to this seminar called Second Aid. Now, basically what it was dealing with the spiritual side of yourself. I thought, that's okay, don't mind. Right. And it was all very, very interesting. To make a long story very painful, okay, I actually met this woman there and we struck it off. And we both had the same kind of personality in so much as we challenged each and every speaker on the scientific basis that they were building this on. Have you any proof of all this kind of thing? So we became very good friends. But after a while, I realized that what I felt for this friend was perhaps a little bit, and I don't want to offend anybody when I say not normal. These are very intense feelings I'm feeling, and it's more than friendship. So that was the beginning of my journey. And of course, I began to realize that perhaps, I was physically, emotionally attracted to this woman. So it had to mean something. It had to mean I must be gay. I have to be gay because that's the only explanation I can find. And because of my Catholicism and because of my upbringing, now I ceased being a Catholic, although the Catholic Church will tell you you'll never cease being a Catholic. But I ceased practicing and I was a quite live and let live person, very non-judgmental. But I persecuted myself because I had this internal dialogue and these demons that came back to haunt me and say, you know, you'll die in the fires of hell for this one. This is disgusting. This is abnormal. This is all of the things that people freely, the language people freely used at one time to describe us, right? And I was going through that internally. So it took me 2 years to tell her how I felt about her. And it took me, I was 40, and it took me to 50, right? Now, we did eventually end up having a relationship. She left her husband, I left my husband. I mean, changed my world completely. But not that, you know, we didn't go off hand in hand into the sunset and live happily ever after. I wanted to, but that didn't happen. So that I can look in hindsight now and see that she was the catalyst to the next step I was going to take in my life. And I was 50 before I actually said, I am a lesbian and I'm okay with that. And I'm not going to die from it. And I'm not going to hide from it. And I'm going to be proud of it. And I'm going to own it. And that's when I really started living. That's the only way I can describe it. Prior to that, don't get me wrong, I was happy. I was a happy person. I was successful in my career. I had two beautiful boys. I had a really happy life. And this came out of second field. This just turned my world literally upside down. But I think that had more to do with the fact that I didn't know how to handle it mentally and internally, right? And I didn't know who to go to for help. I didn't think I could get help. I was busy condemning myself. So I suppose that's when I began to realise I really didn't have an open, honest relationship with myself, never mind the outside world. So until I did that, I wasn't able to actually go, I'm going to stand up and be counted.
That's very powerful. And I think it sounds like you'd had a lot of factors in your past as well, which naturally made it feel like this would be a lot easier if it just went away. Can I solve this on my own?
Yes, I did. I thought it would go away. I thought it would dissolve. I thought it was just attraction. You know, sometimes you find somebody really, really attractive and you get to know them and you go, you're not so hot after all. You know what I mean? So I did think it would have a sell-by date. So much so that I did go to a counsellor in the end just to say, stop this from happening, right? And he said it was transference. He said, it's easy. It's no worries. Just tell her how you feel and it'll go. It'll disappear. He said, now, you may lose the friendship. And he said, but you'll be free. And I thought, I'll do that. And that's what I did. Told her and didn't feel free. I felt relieved. I thought, well, it's done now. Didn't expect ever to see her again. And on the drive home, I remember thinking to myself, and I'm crying. I'm drowning in my tears. And I'm going, it's okay. I feel relieved now. And I get better. Well, that didn't happen. And she did say she felt the same way. So that just burnt everything. That just charged everything up again. And so I felt I had to make a decision then. And although we weren't in a relationship at that time, I thought I can't stay in a marriage. And I loved him very much. But the love I felt for her undermined what we had. And I just felt I can't do that to him. He deserves better than that. And I wanted to be with her. It's simple as that. I wanted to be with her.
And I think there's incredible strength in you realising that, in realising the clarity that you had, taking ownership, even though it took a while, because I think that's something all of us have probably experienced at some point with relationships, where you realise in so many ways, I should be happy with this. And in many ways, that can be very genuine as well. But love is this strange thing where you understand it more in almost steps. You know, when you're little and you're running around in the playground, you think you know what love is. And then throughout your life, you keep learning, oh, no, there's another layer. Or maybe you have kids and it's a different layer.
Yeah, absolutely. I couldn't agree more, Bobby. That's what it's like. It's layers of love. It's still the same energy. It's just going in a different direction. You know what I mean?
Mm.
And it is layers. It is. And that's what relationships are all built on, isn't it? You know, the love we have for our parents is very different to the love we have for our siblings, for our brothers and sisters and friends and colleagues who become friends. You know, it's all there. It's all a great big mix.
And another thing that I think you had a slightly similar journey on was expectations around sex. So you had an idea of what that should be and what you as a woman should get out of it and whether or not it's enjoyable.
Oh, you know, I mean, absolutely. To me, I thought, is this it? Oh, no, I felt so cheated by it. But again, I didn't know how to express my needs, right? And I had this expectation that he would know what to do.
Hmm.
Because we're not supposed to even talk about it. Never mind say, here, I'd like it like this. You just didn't talk about it. So it was really, looking back at it, I can laugh. But at the time, it was quite tragic because I honestly thought there was something fundamentally wrong with me, physically wrong with me, so much so that I did go to a doctor and say, I'm deformed. And to this day, Bobby, I have to say, I was 22, 23. And to me, he was an old man. Now, he's probably only about 50, but to me, he was an old man. And to have the courage to say what I was about to say, right? And he was so gentle. Now, anyone else that I've related that story to since have fallen around the place laughing, thinking it's the most funniest story that they ever did hear in their lives, right? If he had laughed at that moment, which he didn't, thankfully, I think I would have been a basket case. I don't think I'd have been able to handle it at all. He was so gentle. He was so informative. He reassured me there was nothing wrong with me. He got pictures out, which mortified me, of the female anatomy I'm going to show you now, where everything is, Eilish. And afterwards, when I came back, and I remember coming back home on the bus, and I remember thinking to myself...
For context as well, for the listeners, what was it you said as the issue?
Okay. See, I even get embarrassed now. What I said to him, I went in and I said, listen, I have a problem.
Hmm.
And I said, I have a sexual problem. So he said, what kind of a problem? What kind of problem? I said, well, I don't have an orgasm. I don't have orgasms, but I know the reason why. And I said, I'm deformed. So he said, in what way are you deformed? I said, my clitoris is in the wrong place. I don't know where I expected it to be, behind my ear, under my nose. I don't know. But that was what I understood it to be. I thought that's why I don't get any stimulation out of sexual intercourse because it's in the wrong place. So nobody's fault, it's my fault. And I'm sure, you know, a surgeon could do something.
So did you think it was just too far away from where it needed to be?
I knew where it was, but I knew it was nowhere near the vagina, right? It was nowhere near where you get stimulation, right? So I'm thinking, it's me. It's up to us.
But you know what? As funny as it is a real problem that women aren't taught about their anatomy enough. And that so much of sex ed is about, you know, don't make a baby. So, of course, penetration was the only stimulation you thought of.
Of course it was. And not only that, but I remember you didn't call it clitoris. I didn't know how to say the word. It sounded like a Greek holiday destination, doesn't it? You know, I've gone to clitoris. And I couldn't say it's my little man in the boat either, right? So so I'm sitting there and I'm going, I've a problem down there, right? And I didn't want to say that either. So I remember studying the name. I remember looking it up in a dictionary and trying to pronounce it. Couldn't ask anybody. I thought, how do you pronounce that word? It's not as if you can say to your friend, is it? How do I pronounce that? But eventually, I did, obviously, I said it, the word okay. As I say, he didn't laugh. He was gentle. He reassured me. He said, I need to show you something, Eilish. I need. And that's when he took out all these pictures that he had in his desk drawer. And they were all of the female anatomy. And it was in colour. I'm mortified now at this stage. Because I've never seen a picture like that. And he's going, now there's the vulva.
You've never seen it looking back at you.
No! No, not looking back at me. And I'm going, Jesus, I don't want to see that. And he said, and here at the very top, he said, we have the clitoris. Uh-huh. I'm going, that's really interesting, right? I'm afraid to look at him and I'm afraid to look at the picture, right? And I remember thinking, I wish I hadn't opened my mouth. And that's when he explained to me, he said, Eilish, not many women have an orgasm through intercourse. You have to be stimulated. And I'm sitting there. Now, the relief is one thing, and the embarrassment is this. So I'm balancing these two emotions while he's explaining everything to me. Then he advised me that I needed to go home. He said, well, I want you to do, I just want you to go home, and I want you to get a mirror, and I want you to really have a good look at yourself and find out where everything is. So I'm going, yeah, that's just what I'll do. I'll put the dinner on and I'll go down. I'll go upstairs. But he was so matter of fact and he made it real. His language was, I could be talking about a backache here, Eilish. And that was the first time I had been able to have a conversation like that without feeling ashamed.
Yeah.
Or without having to put a different word to it. Now I put it in my show. I got to tell you, Bobby, I did my show in Galway about 5 years ago, right? In a town hall in Galway. My grandfather came from this town and they asked me if I'd come and do my show. But when I got there, it's in a little town hall and the guy who's organised it all for me says, listen, he said, now we can't have it until 9 o'clock tonight because Saturday night, because they'll all be at mass. So I'm going, okay. And he said, and the parish priest, he'll be coming to the show. And I went, you are kidding me. I said, listen, does the parish priest know what's in this show? Now, it's not obscene. It's not rude. I said, I sent you all the blurbs, so you know it's quite personal. Oh, no, he's been announcing it at Sunday morning mass for the last 6 weeks.
Wow.
So we're booked out. So I remember the Friday night doing it. And, of course, when I started talking about clitoris and so on and so forth, and my cousin, second cousin, who was 84, is sitting in the front row with his two daughters. When the show was over, as he's walking out, he says to his daughter, if I hear the word clitoris one more time, I was going to get up and walk out.
Oh. Right?
Now, I understood it, but I'm thinking, what else would you like me to call it? Because that's what it's called. So you still have some people who really have an issue in naming certain parts of the body and giving them the proper name. Yeah, so I thought, what am I supposed to say? It is what it is. I'm not vulgar. I'm not rude
right.
about it.
And so, that's the thing, though. You'd work through that. You know, you'd actually sat there with your dictionary. But this is the problem. It's so disempowering for everyone. this lack of conversation, yes, including men.
Yes.
Because we're sold the false expectation. And that's what I thought when I was really little. I thought you put it in and you're sort of away. Like, I didn't even know that frosting was part of it. I just thought you plug it in like a socket and then everyone's good.
And it all happens for you. And then you turn around and say, was that good for you? And of course, if she's Irish, she'd probably say, oh, it was great, lying through her teeth. Right? Oh, that was fabulous. I think I felt cheated because the earth didn't move, right? And that's the romantic stories I'm reading and all the little innuendos you hear when you're growing up and, oh, it's wonderful when you're so in love and it's so this, that and the other. And I'm going, it's none of that. You have to work at it. It's like anything. It's a recipe. So having sex is a recipe between two people. And it's beautiful when you get it right. It's absolutely the most wonderful expression of love there is, in my opinion. Right, particularly on an intimate level.
I have to give you a point there. It's so well expressed because you do have to work at it. And that's where we're all sold that false idea of the sort of fairy tale, like the black screen goes down. And, and what we don't see is actually anybody working at it. And it's not just that. You've got to work at every part of a relationship. You know, it's like expecting that people would be happy together by default. You just put them in a room and they're happy. It's the same thing, you know, so it's not that you can't have an orgasm in that way. A lot of women still can, but it doesn't mean it's that automated, like, flick of a light switch.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. You know, so information is a very powerful thing. It's a very powerful tool. And when you don't have the information, then you are kind of groping around in the dark, right? So, you know, if I'd had daughters, now I did with my sons, if I'd had daughters, they would have been fully aware of what their bodies were all about. And I'd have encouraged them to say no. Powerful word. If you don't want to do something, the answer is no. Don't feel you coerced, persuaded. It's your body. You make the choices about your body, not anybody else. But I didn't. I had two sons instead, but I told them. Did you see here, right? But that was part of my journey anyway.
Yeah. And so you're learning about this and you've also got your sexuality to come to terms with. And am I right in thinking you went on a bit of a learning with that? You passed the initial stages.
When I first moved back to Ireland, I ran away. The relationship didn't work out with the woman I had fallen madly in love with. And I wasn't able to cope with the reality of what am I going to do now? Right. So I decided I always wanted to come back to Ireland. So I thought, well, this is just as good a time to come back to Ireland. And I went and I lived in West Cork. Now, you couldn't get more remote than where I was. And I realized, again, in hindsight, that what I was doing was hiding. I was trying to run away from it. But after about 2 years, the loneliness outweighed the guilt. And I decided I need to do something about this. So I tentatively started looking for support groups. I knew there was a place called Live and Let Live. And I rang the number and I spoke to the lady and she said, you know, I said, you know, I'm phoning about the Live and Let Live group. Can you tell me when do they meet? Yeah, we meet every Tuesday night, 7:30 to 9:30 in this room, blah, blah, blah. I said, anybody welcome? She said, anybody welcome, right? So I'm thinking I'm going to a social group. Whew. So I go, I decided, no, I don't want to get there too early because if they're all sitting around drinking teas and, you know, I don't want to walk in and be the first one there. So I want to kind of walk in when there's a lot of people moving about. This is in my head, right? So I walk in about 7:45 instead of 7:30 and I get into the room and there's a circle of people all sitting in a circle, men and women. So I think that's okay. And I put my head in the door and I said, excuse me, is this Live and Let Live? Yes, come in, sit down. So I do. And the lady who was chairing it or, you know, facilitating the meeting goes, listen, John was just in the middle of telling us his story. So if you don't mind, we'll carry on. I said, go ahead. No problem. Right? No. And I'm thinking it's a bit peculiar for a social get together to be all sitting in a circle. Right. But hey, so John starts off.
Was his story. Part of you that thought this is it? This is not being straight. This is my life now.
Well, it wasn't even that. I didn't even get to that point because John starts with his story, which is like for the last 4 weeks now. No, I haven't had a drink. So I'm sitting back going, holy shit. It goes to the next person, right? And she tells her story and it's coming around to me. And I'm thinking, now my internal dialogue's gone, oh my God, I'm in an AA meeting. I better get up and say, look, I'm sorry, I'm in the wrong group. Then I'm going to have to explain, or they're going to think she's in denial. And I'm going, I'm not in denial. I've been in a group before like this. I'm not in denial. You know, I used to be part of Al-Anon, so I do know the whole thing. I'm not, oh, and the panic. So when it gets to the guy next to me, she said, you know, would you like to share your story? And he said, I'd rather not talk this week. So it gets to me. And I went, I'd rather not talk this week. I couldn't say, look, I've really fecked up here, right? I thought this was going to be a social group. And it turns out the name was misleading. Live and Let Live. But it was an AA group in Cork. So that was my very first attempt to join a support group and say, listen, I might be a lesbian. What do you think? Quite a few funny things happened after that. But I did go to the facilitator and I said, look, I live in West Cork. This is Cork City. I'm really trying to make contact with people in... I mean, obviously, it was a gay AA group. And she put me in touch. She said, I have a few friends live down there. I'll pass on your number to them. And they contacted me about 6 weeks later. And I have so many friends in West Cork now, you wouldn't believe. So that mistake reaped its rewards. But I felt very guilty about the mistake. I felt... Can they trust? Will they think if they find out, do they think I can't be trusted? And I thought, I'm just giving myself a hard time about the wrong thing. You know what I mean? So, yeah.
Wow. And you seem to have this sort of mentality. Am I right in saying that the lesbian community was going to be very different, that it's a different sort of people? And I even heard you say in an interview you were worried about your haircut and if you'd be rejected.
I remember thinking when I first went to the LINK group in Cork, which stands for Lesbians in Cork, right? And I thought, now that's where I need to go. I need to go to one of their open meetings, which they were having. So I got myself dressed up and I went. And I actually, at that stage, had my hair cut short, right? Had the Levi jeans and the check shirt, right? Because I thought you had to look the part. Otherwise, they wouldn't think you're a lesbian at all. So I'm looking the part. I get to this meet. But before I went in, I'm walking up and down because I'd never met a lesbian before in my life. So I'm thinking, I don't know what to expect here.
Well, that you know of, though, there's the irony.
There's the irony that I know of.
Yeah, so you would have probably thought you had if they'd been wearing the dress you
Absolutely.
Thought.
Absolutely. And I only knew what the stereotypical, right? So I'm expecting to go into this meeting and they'll all have shaved heads and be drinking cider and rolling their own fags and tattoos and so on and so forth. And I mean, I have never been more surprised in my life because when I went in, I met teachers, doctors, solicitors, university lecturers, filmmakers, and I'm going, Christ, I have to have a degree to be a lesbian. I mean, these are all very educated people, you know? And that taught me that I judge with my eyes. We all judge with our eyes. We all have this preconceived perception of what people should be and look like if that's who they are. I used to think that all professors looked like professors, you know, they all had beards and they were all a bit quirky and they hadn't got a sense of humour. Well, they do. They're people like everybody else. So, yeah, I actually judged and I met some women there that there was no way you could say, now she looks like a lesbian. Never judge a book by its cover because you'll never know what's inside the book if you don't read it. So I soon... let my hair grow. I'm as short now, but I soon kind of thought it's okay to be feminine and it's okay to be a lesbian. That was 20 years ago. Now it's very different in Ireland and there's all sorts of different labels been thrown about, so on and so forth. And I hate labels. I don't like to call myself a lesbian anymore or gay anymore. I am who I am. Don't put a label on me because it's too restricting.
it's a way to separate people, isn't it? And I think that's maybe, you know, I talk about it sometimes as sexuality 2.0, that we might get to a point where there's enough understanding that we don't need the labels as shortcuts, because also what it does is it can be quite invalidating. You know, so just because you then went on to identify as lesbian doesn't mean that your marriage was invalid and you still loved your husband. It was just a different kind of love.
Yeah, and that's exactly what it is. It's like, and I don't know, it's amazing how time changes your perception, right? Now, when I wrote Live, Love, Laugh, my life was very different to what it is today. So when I look back now and I go, actually, if somebody said to me, so do you identify as a lesbian? Are you a lesbian? And I go, well, actually, I really don't know. I know that I'm in a loving relationship with a woman, which I hope will last my lifetime. However, I said, should I lose her through death? I'm not sure if I would fall in love with a man or fall in love with a woman, because I fall in love with the person, right? That's how I feel now. Now, I might change my mind in 10 years' time, but that's the wonderful thing about life. I think you're allowed to do that. You're allowed to shift and go, no, I see it differently now. I was so desperate to put a label on myself. I needed to belong. And that gave me a sense of belonging. And I needed the support. They gave me the support. It wasn't out in my own society. So they gave me. So it was a life I really needed. It was the lifeboat I needed at that particular time. And I felt safe and loved and encouraged and supported. And that was so important for me. On all levels, that's what I needed in my life. And I got it. I was very, very lucky.
That's so lovely to hear. And that's very similar to my own outlook. That really? I just see it in that way, that sexuality is this kind of fluid, ever-changing thing. And it's more complicated. It's not just who you're attracted to. It's not just gender, right? In different stages of our lives, we might be attracted to different ages of people or look for different things in a relationship. And it's all part
Absolutely.
Of this ever-moving process.
I agree. Yeah.
And so, sadly, we are running out of time. So we'll wrap up with our rules of the game. So have you got one in mind, a rule you think more people should live by with relationships?
Oh, yeah. Communicate. Talk. One rule I would say anybody in any relationship, say how you feel. Say what you need. Right.
I think that's so important. We've actually got, as part of the Patreon I mentioned earlier, we're going to have a monthly show with me and my flatmate, who's a counsellor.
Yeah.
And we're going to be answering people's questions. And part of me is a bit worried that most of my advice will just be to communicate. But I think often that's what people need to hear.
It is really, even if I personalise it myself, right? Every relationship has its problems. That's not, we don't live in la-la land, right? We live in the real world. So we do, you will come up against issues, right? Am I the best at saying what I need? No, I'm not. Never been conditioned to express it. I've tried very hard. I've got better at it. And my partner is not great either. Same cultural background. Right? It's like, we don't talk about things like that, right? And I go, no, actually, we have to talk about things like that. And we have to say, it's okay to say how you're feeling and what you need. It doesn't mean you're hurting or blaming anybody. You're just saying, I need this in my relationship with you. And it isn't there. Yeah, I need this. Now, if we can't resolve it, at least let's talk about it. Right. Or if it's the language I'm using is making you feel whatever, you know what I mean? But communication is so important. And we just need to stress that, I think. And that's why people go off to counsellors. And that's why people get depressed. And that's why, because they're not expressing, they're unable to get it out. And once you get it out, it's like somebody lancing a boil. Right. Once it's out, and I know it's an awful description, isn't it? But it is, you know, when you hold that kind of emotion, it becomes negative emotion. It becomes a poison and you have to let it bleed. You have to lance it. And the only way you can do that is to express it. And we can cry and that helps. We can laugh and that helps. But to really shift it, that needs expression.
So true. And I guess my rule of the game I'll offer up is sort of linked to that, which is if you expect yourself to stay the same, you'll be disappointed. if you expect yourself to change, you'll be pleasantly surprised.
Yes, and I think that's very powerful. And I'd add to that, though, if you're looking for perfection, you're going to be very disappointed. If you accept that we are imperfect human beings to start with, it's impossible to achieve perfection. But what we can achieve is our best, right? And I think we get caught up in the perfect world. And social media, I think, has a huge responsibility to do with that. But we get caught up in how we should be, how we should look, how we should act, how cool we should be, and so on and so forth. We are not perfect human beings. We're imperfect human beings. And the two doesn't equate. Imperfect cannot become perfect. Not if fundamentally that's how we're born imperfect. But we can strive to be the best we can possibly be. And particularly in relationships, make the endeavour to have the relationship the best it can be for both of you.
Well, that's it. I mean, we could have a whole other chat about the trap of trying to make your relationship look like an ideal.
Absolutely. It's got to be the best that you can give it.
Well, we'll wrap up on that really great point.
Okay.
Thank you so much for joining me. Is there anything you want to push? I know you've got a Christmas special.
We have a Christmas special coming up, and that will be obviously on Christmas Day in the UK, and I think New Year's Eve in the UK. In Ireland, it is Christmas Day, and I think Stephen's Day. Boxing Day to the UK residents, okay? But we call it Stephen's, St. Stephen's Day. And also, if they lift and we can get back to a semi-normal situation, I really would look forward to taking my show to the UK. I've never done it in the UK, apart from the Edinburgh Festival. I've toured with it 3 times now in Ireland over the last 7 years. And it's. I know you came to see it, Bobby, in Edinburgh, and I thank you for that. It was very raw then. Or should I say, I was very raw then. And so I've grown into the show, if that makes sense.
So what you're saying is I need to come back.
You'd have to come back, because you will see the difference in me. I'm so relaxed in it. I now go into the words. I now feel it as I'm telling it, right? And that's lovely. So that has been a wonderful journey for me. And a lovely part of growing up, of truly accepting myself, flaws and all.
And we actually will talk a little bit more about your show in a moment for the Patreon exclusive bit. There's even a time where we met each other. So we'll see if you remember that. I'll tell you in a second. That's everything. Thank you so much for this.
Pleasure. Absolutely. Thank you for having me. And I know I talk for Ireland. And if I've over-talked, I hope you have a good editor.
Thank you. We do. Thanks for listening. For bonus content, extended ad-free episodes, and other perks, you can join our Patreon, linked in the episode description. Our show is edited and produced by Pete Mata, with music by the brilliant Tessa Violet. Speak to you next Friday. Until then, game well.